This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Jeffrey Seremita. Dr. Seremita is the president of Mercy Clinic in St. Louis. Thrilled to get a chance to visit with him today. Dr. Seremita, can you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your career?
Oh, sure. Good morning, Scott. And once again, thank you very much for having me. It's nice to be with you this morning. As you said, my name is Jeff Seremita. I am a practicing non-invasive cardiologist for Mercy Clinic Heart and Vascular in St. Louis. Completed 14 years of my post-high school education all at St. Louis University. Like many people, back in 2008, I joined a private practice cardiology group. And that group soon thereafter was purchased by Mercy Health. In 2008, I was the eighth cardiologist to join the group. Like a lot of health systems growing cardiology, by 2012, our group had grown to 29 employed cardiologists. And it was in the spring of that year, in 2012, where I was asked to become chief of cardiology at Mercy Hospital in St. Louis. Had the opportunity to lead just an incredible group of people for 5.5 years as the cardiology chief. Surrounded by incredible partners, staff, and everyone really took pride in their roles and had something critical to add. We were blessed to get a number of top quality honors, always be consistently the highest in patient satisfaction. And bottom line is we had the right team, and thereafter I was the beneficiary of some of that success from my group and staff and partners. When Mercy Hospital bought St. Anthony's Medical Center, also in the St. Louis area, on June 1st of 2017. St. Anthony's Medical Center was the fifth largest hospital in the state, and at that time I was asked to leave my post in cardiology and go down on behalf of Mercy to start and lead the multi-specialty group of physicians in that area. Mercy Clinic South was legally formed then on January 1st of 2018, where I assumed duties at that time as clinic president of Mercy Clinic South. And then getting to today, by July 1st of 2019, just a little over a year ago, the president of Mercy Clinic St. Louis was retiring, and which seemed to coincide with our goal for that St. Louis metropolitan area to regionalize our approach and have one overall structure for our clinic group. And so I assumed those responsibilities as well, which leads us to today, where I hold the title of president of Mercy Clinic St. Louis, as well as Mercy Clinic South, which is basically the metropolitan area of St. Louis and the surrounding region.
Thank you. And how many physicians does that include today?
So today, Mercy Clinic St. Louis and South is over 1,000 physicians. Just a little over 650 advanced practitioners, and that area that we serve helps to serve 4 traditional hospitals: Mercy Hospital St. Louis, South Washington, and Jefferson, as well as 1 critical access hospital in St. Louis.
And Dr. Seremita, how do you manage that? Do you talk mostly to 5 or 10 direct reports, and they're not really direct reports because they might be chairs of different physician areas? Do you talk to your chief operating officer? How do you manage a group of 1,000 physicians? What's your core in terms of, because you can't be friends with, I mean, you can be friendly, but you can't be friends and close to and report directly with all 1,000 of them. So how do you sort of manage your communications or who you work with and how that works through the system?
Yes, Scott, that's a really great question, just because of the enormity, but also the how far apart we are geographically as well. The quick answer to that is we have an unbelievably great and strong team. How we are set up within Mercy Clinic is we truly hold to the mantra as a physician-led, professionally managed organization, which means at every level there is a dyad relationship between a physician leader and their administrative partner. Within our group of Mercy Clinic St. Louis and South, then, we have physicians who serve as department chairs. We have physicians then who serve as the section chairs and are supported by those department chairs. Now, our department chairs are then paired up with their dyad partner, who are clinic vice presidents. So, for example, in our St. Louis area, we have 7 administrative vice presidents that are paired with our physician leaders. Our structure, just because of the importance and evolution and changes, our structure meets essentially every day from a senior leadership team. The administrative team kicks off every week, such as today, by meeting and starting our clinic senior management. With our physician teams, we meet every other week on Tuesday afternoons, and we go through every initiative, every question, any new news that we have collectively as what we call our combined clinic exec team. And then from there, we attack as needed. As you mentioned, we have a wonderful COO, Chief Operating Officer of the region, who can help support us, as well as the dyad teams who are out there, and we go to every location. That's key. Everybody needs to see the team in person. You can't spend too much time at one location. But the size does create challenges at times. The structure and the team have to make up for those challenges.
Dr. Ceramita, what are your biggest challenges? Obviously, this year, COVID-19 is a huge challenge, but is it year in, year out, finding the right chairs of departments? Because if you have the right chairs of departments, you're in good shape. Is it retaining physicians? Is it avoiding burnout? What do you sort of view as the big 3 or 4 challenges in leading a group like this?
Oh, another great question. I would first answer that by saying our biggest challenge within Mercy Clinic has not been finding the right leaders. We have been blessed. Mercy Clinic St. Louis, for instance, was legally formed on January 1st of 2010. So we're just a little over 10 years old. We've been blessed with very strong physician leaders from the outset, and that's really where we have put all of our focus. So from a leadership perspective, that's not been the challenge. COVID, of course, has put innumerable challenges on all healthcare organizations that I think is probably not the intent of that question. So setting COVID aside, I think the biggest challenge is how quickly we as a large organization can evolve some of our operations to maintain that patient in the center of everything. And what I mean by that is that the patient expectations, even those last 10 years, or for myself, the last 13 years I've been with Mercy, the expectations have changed dramatically. The time they want until they get an appointment, for instance, or their willingness to wait for a specialist, or get lab results, or have discussions, and even their approach to seeing advanced practitioners versus their regular physicians versus going to urgent and convenient cares, those expectations are changing so quickly. Every year they change, and with that, we have to adapt and keep up the way we deliver clinical care. Because as we see today...
Let me ask you a question on this. I mean, if you look at the United States, 330 million people, aging population, looming shortages, huge shortages in specialists, shortages in primary care, but different ways of managing that. For example, through physician assistants, through, you know, advanced practitioners. How quickly do you think it will get to the point where people are generally comfortable for a primary care visit, what was a primary care visit, that they're often going to see their PA? Do you think we're going to see that evolution? And how quickly is that mindset turning to, yes, when I go to the urgent care, that's who I see first, unless there's something more complicated, then they bring in the physician. How quickly is that mindset evolving to leverage talent in a place where we have shortages?
I think that mindset has evolved rapidly, and we are right there. And so let me explain, Scott. With that, as you noted, for all of those reasons that you noted, today we will never have enough primary care physicians to do everything, to approach the sore throat or the sprained ankle, but then also to approach the chronic medical conditions that we have as this country is moving towards more of population health management, value-based care, proving high-quality care at lower costs. That is the direction where primary care is moving. because of that, we as an organization, but also this country, is evolving to focus our physicians and our primary care physicians at that to really look at disease management and population health. That means they'll see typically the older and more sicker patients with more chronic conditions. Then care will be delivered to advanced practitioners, as you know, to physician assistants or nurse practitioners, to work then towards the top of their license, looking at more of the lower acuity care, but still in a lower cost fashion. And then finally, what other opportunities are there out there? You mentioned urgent cares or convenient cares or diagnostic centers, some other avenues of care where we can look at acute, potentially injuries, acute illnesses, but also keep that point of care cost lower by keeping patients out of the hospital and out of our emergency departments, where, of course, those costs go up and the subsequent challenges there and of healthcare for the country are presented. So I think we are there, and that's, again, one more challenge for us as an organization within Mercy Clinic. How do we evolve to keep up with that?
And what about, I think more and more of us have a better understanding of how you leverage primary care physicians to try and at least improve the situation in terms of having enough primary care. What about specialists? How do you leverage specialists? Is it a similar type thing that specialists really get relegated just doing what they do very best and we leverage them? Or are there just a lot more things where it's very hard to leverage specialists in the right way?
So, yes, I would say that answer to you, of course, is yes. But within Mercy Clinic, that's one of our benefits of having such a large, the largest integrated medical practice is that collaboration has to occur at all levels in a coordinated approach. So our primary care teams must then work with our specialists. For instance, in St. Louis, we have over 50 cardiologists. As we evolve from a traditional fee-for-service model to the model that focuses on the highest quality of care while keeping costs contained, the primary care physicians and the cardiology group or the orthopedic surgery group or whomever you're talking about, they have to approach that to say, are we doing the best for the patient? Are we testing? Are we following appropriate use criteria? Are we getting patients in quickly? Part of seeing a specialist, by the way, might be a quick evaluation to triage somebody into a lower acuity care and or avoid a test. So not only is the specialist a part of that team, a specialist is a part of that team with the same goal of looking at the organization and the patient in that centered approach to say, are we doing the right thing for that patient? And that's what you're going to see with all health systems as we tend to now evolve away from that fee-for-service model, which in the end should, if it works the way it is, will benefit the patients.
Thank you. One more question. It strikes me that a disproportionate number of physician leaders come from the interventional cardiology ranks. Any sort of, and it may be just the anecdotal bias that I see and who I get the chance to interview and visit with, but any sense of why interventional cardiologists ended up being very involved in leadership of systems and groups and so forth? Why would that be?
It's a fascinating question. My predecessor, who I took over from Mercy Clinic St. Louis, was an interventional cardiologist as well. I don't have a great answer. I have some insights into that. My insight would be that throughout medical history in the United States, much of cardiology care has evolved and has really been directed by many of the thought leaders across the country as part of healthcare in general evolving. Our training programs are led by many of these fantastic physicians who've really been the shoulders that we stand on. So my only guess could be that once physicians and people, the men and women, enter into cardiology programs, they're around, they're used to, they learn from, their mentors are people engaged in improving healthcare or getting healthcare right. part of that becomes not only your job to deliver care, but also to improve the care for the next generation. And I think cardiology is probably a good representation of high-quality people that have a vested interest in improving not just cardiac care, but care of the patient in general.
It's really a bridge specialty between proceduralist and primary care internal medicine. So it's really probably fits that right spot of being able to relate well both on the procedural side and to the internal medicine side. So just a fascinating situation. We see so many of the leaders that it come across our podcast as either practicing or former interventional cardiologists that have ended up in leadership. It's just fascinating for me to watch how that kind of evolves and so forth. Anyways, Dr. Ceramita, a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today.
Scott, my pleasure. Thank you for having me and have a wonderful day.